Amateur Traveler, Episode 98. Today the Amateur Traveler goes to Belgium and the Netherlands.
I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo.
Oh no.
15-hour flight, oh. I don't think I'll ever be coming home. You know I love it. I got to see one more cathedral. In one more cafe, I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Normally at this portion of the show, I'd give you news, but honestly, I have no idea what the news is, even world news, because I'm still on vacation. I'm recording this while sitting on the balcony of the International Youth Hostel in Grindelwald, Switzerland, looking out at the rain. So I'll catch you up more on that story in a few weeks after I get back, when I put together at least 3 episodes, I believe, on the current European trip, as well as several video episodes. The one piece of news I do have is that no one, absolutely no one, has entered the second anniversary contest for the Amateur Traveler, whose prize is to win a travel poster. And remember, the winner is the one who has the most correct guesses of the locations for the 8 pictures, which are in the Amateur Traveler logo. And at this point, getting one picture right would make you the winner. I'm going to extend the contest until I get back, which is going to put it on the 19th of July. And let's see if anybody can figure out at least one of the pictures in the logo by then. I think you can do it. And with no further ado, then, let's bring you this week's interview. I'd like to welcome to the show Daniel Perez, who's come to talk to us about a recent trip to Belgium and the Netherlands. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
And Daniel is another member of a new organization that he and I have been working on, which is the Travel Podcasters Network. And Daniel has probably one of the more unusual travel podcasts. You have the Gamer Traveler.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you explain it.
Basically, it's a show about gaming and travel, both rolled into one. I'm a role player and a gamer of, you know, many, many years. And when I was trying to figure out a podcast that I wanted to do, mostly for my gaming interest, I didn't want to rehash what other people were doing. So I went for the weirdest angle that I could find, and I decided to combine it with my love of travel. It was originally a segment in another podcast, like a feature segment. And I would talk about a small location, and then you tell ways of using it in a role-playing game or setting or anything like that. And eventually I decided to go ahead and take it solo, and it's been doing very well.
So you recently were on a 10-day trip to the Netherlands and Belgium.
It was actually a year ago right now.
Okay. And can you tell us where you went? First, let's lay out the itinerary.
Sure. We flew from Miami to Brussels, and we spent 3 days in Brussels. Then we went up to Amsterdam, spent a couple of days there. I think it was 3 or 4 days in Amsterdam. Then went back down into Belgium to visit Bruges, spent a few days there, then went back up into the Netherlands to the town of Delft, and one more day in Amsterdam before returning back to the States.
Okay. And then let's take those kind of one at a time and hit the highlights of the different places. So you started in Brussels.
Brussels.
So what were the highlights of Brussels for you?
Actually, the city itself, we had read up on our destinations. We usually do that. We're nerds like that.
Well, you've come to the right place.
But we didn't really know what to expect out of Belgium in general, because it's usually one of these like, oh, you know, there's France and England and Germany, and oh, yeah, there's Belgium over there. So we sort of knew the highlights, and we've seen our videos and everything, but we weren't really ready for what we encountered there, and it was a very nice surprise. Brussels is a very international city. It was very laid back, very quiet, kind of French in that sense, but it certainly has a lot of that Dutch entrepreneurial sense of, you know, the merchant core of the city. Mm-hmm. It was very interesting. Very welcome surprise to our trip. Very good start, too.
Any particular part of Brussels that stands out in terms of places that you saw or things that you did?
Absolutely. We were staying in a hotel that was just 2 streets away from the Grand Place, mm-hmm. which is the center, the main square of Brussels. It's always been its heart. And this has been labeled by some people as the grandest and most amazing square in Europe. And it certainly has a fighting shot for that title. It's beautiful. It's the right size. It's surrounded by these beautiful and amazing gabled guild houses dating back to the 16th and 17th century. And it's a very relaxing place. There's food and drinks and all around, and just fantastic. Outside of that, there was also the upper part of the city where you get to see the Museum of Musical Instruments in an old Art Deco building, which Art Nouveau building, which is also very nice. And there's the Codeberg Museum, which is an underground look at some of the foundations of medieval Brussels, which was just awesome. Yeah. This is just off of the Royal Palace. Mm-hmm. It's in one of the little wings to the side. You go in, you go down the stairs. It's usually very empty. It certainly was when we went. It was Saturday and it was just empty. It was us and two other people. And you actually go into the foundations of medieval Brussels. You get to walk under the main road above, and you get to see the old, I think it's the left wing of the palace, which used to be a church. You get to see the basilica area where the altar would have been, and then you actually get to go into what would have been the street and see the street itself and some of the houses that would have been lining it, which is also very cool.
So Brussels, like a lot of old cities you're saying, has built up upon that level, the medieval level.
Very much so, actually. Mm-hmm. It's another one of those cases in Europe where whatever they dig, they certainly have to stop every so often because they're finding new things.
Interesting. And then your next stop after Brussels was Amsterdam.
From Brussels, we took a train up to Amsterdam, and we had been to Amsterdam back in 2001, the first time that we went to Europe, my wife and I and another friends. So we sort of knew what to expect. It was, in a way, kind of like coming home, because the first time that we arrived in Amsterdam, we had just come from England, so Amsterdam was very much a culture shock. This time, it was the known place, so we felt very comfortable going back to it and knowing a few things, you know, what to expect in the city as far as transportation, the attitude of the people and things like that, then, you know, it made it easier to just fall into place in the city. Not to mention that it's just one of the best cities in Europe, so it's just...
Okay, now why do you say that? What makes it the best for you?
I feel bad for Amsterdam in some ways, because it's one of the places that most people just view as a party central. It really is just a fantastic cultural landmark. It has so much history. It's seen so much of what is the history of Europe, pretty much from medieval times or before, up until the modern era. Some people just usually dismiss it as being only, you know, this place where pot is legal and there's parties all the time, which is certainly a part of it, but, you know, not all of it.
And so if I'm going to Amsterdam for the first time, and I've been there actually once before, where would you recommend I go? I'll go here and I'll say, yes, Daniel was right. This is one of the best cities in Europe.
There's the Damrak, just the main street coming off of the train station. It's just kind of your usual main street, but, you know, you get to see a little bit of what makes Amsterdam, Amsterdam. Everything from the tulips and the flowers and the wooden shoes and, you know, the naughty parts and everything like that. And you get to the Dam Square, where you get to the main center. The old dam used to be that, you know, for which Amsterdam takes its name. We went to the Anne Frank House, which is, you know, one of those locations that you certainly have to go. On our first trip, we took an afternoon and spent it in the Vondelpark. We didn't have a chance to do it this time, but it certainly stood in our minds as some of the nicest time that we spent in the city, because it's just nice to just be relaxing along with the natives of the city where they go to relax. There's, of course, the various museums. There's Van Gogh Museum. There's the Rembrandt Museum, the Heineken Experience, and you just have to visit it as well.
The Heineken Experience.
Yeah, it's the old Heineken Brewery in the middle of the city. Now, they've actually moved the outside of the city, but they maintain that as a visitor center, and it's pretty cool. It's kind of kitschy, but, you know, you get free Heineken during the trip, so.
All right.
It makes it all worthwhile. And then we also visited the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue, which was just a few streets away from our hotel over there.
Any other highlights of Amsterdam as we're just doing our quick pass through once here?
Just walking through the streets. Amsterdam is just one of these places I personally like to just walk around. On our return trip, we only spent the night there because we're flying out of Schiphol Airport. Mm-hmm. And we stayed in a different hotel. We stayed near the red light district, and that was an experience. I don't know that I would do it again, but it certainly was cool to do it just the one time. And, you know, you certainly get to see what makes Amsterdam a very liberal place. But it's also just cool to walk around. You get to see a lot of the hidden culture that the city has to offer. There's little houses where Rembrandt lived, and nobody really makes a big deal about it. It's just down the street from the synagogue. That's it. There's also the areas where you can get some of the hidden history in terms of, you know, what happened during World War II, the bunkers and the buildings that were used as secret meeting places. Those are kind of outlined in different areas of the city. and just to hang out and relax. It is a very laid-back city, and if you just want to go and have a nice time just relaxing, but in the middle of the city, it is certainly one of the best places to do it.
Okay. Now, one thing you mentioned is that you had taken the train from Brussels up to Amsterdam. So you decided this time not to rent a car, but to get around by train. What was part of the decision process?
We flew to Brussels and Amsterdam as part of a tour deal that we found through a tour agency. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't guided, but they sort of packaged all the amenities in there, and it was a really good price, so we decided to take it.
So you did a self-guided tour where they're basically booking all the accommodations and the transportation, but you are on your own in the cities.
Yep.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
That's what accounts for the fact that we went from Belgium to Netherlands, then back down to Belgium and back up, because the first part of the tour was what was covered by our package deal. And then after that was done, we decided to stay another week, and then we went back down to Bruges and then up into Delft and back into Amsterdam. Yeah, not to mention that it's just cool taking the train. We had the chance to take the trains extensively when we spent a month in Europe back in 2001. And on our subsequent trips to Europe, the second time was in Ireland, and we used our car because Ireland is just, it's better just to rent a car. And then we spent a week in Paris, which, you know, you just don't move around. You just spend the time in the city, so... Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so your next stop was Bruges.
Yeah, we and took a train.
Bruges is one of my favorite cities in Europe, so we're gonna slow down if you're a bit.
You know what? That's exactly what you do when you arrive there. We took a train down into Bruges, and boy, what a surprise that was. That's a town that you literally, you want to just grab it, put it in your pocket, and take it with you wherever you go, because it really delivers on what it promises. Is this medieval gem just hidden in the, not hidden, but it was for many years. It's certainly been found by now. It is very much a touristy place. But,
sure.
But you see, what I like about Bruges is the fact that it is touristy, but it doesn't feel horribly touristy. It doesn't feel like Disney World or anything like that. The people of Bruges have done a really good job of giving tourists all the information that they need and then just stepping back, letting them enjoy the city on their own. And that's precisely what we did. We stayed in a B&B that we found online, and it was just the most amazing little place. It was kind of...
Was it inside the historic center then, or just outside?
We were inside the actual historic center, but we were... I think it was north of the city. I don't quite recall the direction right now, but it were like a 5-minute walk away from the square,
okay,
which was close enough to walk, but not right there. So we didn't have all the touristy bustle on our street.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just fantastic. We had a couple that runs a store and a B&B all in the same building.
Mm-hmm.
So every morning we woke up to these humongous baskets of breads and fruits and chocolates and meats and cheeses. And it was just fantastic.
And see, that's when I knew I was going to enjoy Belgium, was when they offered me chocolate, or I think it was actually probably Nutella, which is a hazelnut spread, to go on
Nutella.
My croissants in the morning. I knew that this was going to be a place that I could enjoy.
I love Nutella. It's like, I love that I can get it in Europe for so cheap.
For us, one of the reasons that I say Bruges stands out for me is you mentioned going to Amsterdam and being a little overwhelmed the first time. That was the very first place that we had stepped foot in Europe, and we were intimidated by it, I'd have to say, at the time. I'm sure I would enjoy it much more now than I did then. And so we didn't spend much time there. We went off to Haarlem and up to Edam. But then the next day, we went to Bruges, and that's when I felt I was really in Europe. Because a lot of Amsterdam, I mean, although it's a very beautiful city, but a lot of outside of Amsterdam, when you're driving on the highway, it felt very similar. It didn't feel that different from home.
I can definitely understand what it is to be overwhelmed by Amsterdam the first time. It completely hit us over the head the first time. My God, we really wanted to just get back in the train and run back to England. It was like, oh my God, this is home. But, you know.
Well, I think for us, we just allowed ourselves to be intimidated by its reputation. I don't think we really gave Amsterdam a chance the very first time we were there.
That happens for us. It was just the, you know, the bustle and the people and the strange language, even though most people speak English, you know, it was just the Dutch and so many people. And I was like, but yeah, I can fully understand how going to Bruges would be like a mental like vacation. It's like, yes, now I'm here.
Anything stand out about Bruges for you?
You mean other than that, aside from the whole city itself? I'm telling you, it was just this fantastic place. There was the Market Square. It was a very nice place. The Grand Carillon was just amazing. We toyed with the idea of climbing the 300 and so steps up to the tower, and then we decided against it because we were tired. And then so we just walked around. We went to the Burg Square and to the Basilica of the Holy Blood. We didn't get there in time to see the relic that supposedly houses a drop of blood of Christ. The church itself is a beautiful architectural masterpiece, and it was nice to see it there. We also just walked around. We did a lot of walking around Bruges because the thing with the Benelux, Netherlands and Belgium in general, is they really don't have this high concentration of bang, world-renowned sites. The sites themselves are, you know, the city itself, the people, and just walking around town and just getting that feel, that vibe. So we did a lot of walking around in Bruges. We rented bikes, and we kept them overnight. We went biking around town. We went to the windmills that are just outside of the city and picnicked all over the place. Fantastic.
Tell you what, you say you didn't get to the top of the tower. We actually did, so I'll scan some of our old pictures, and if you watch the iTunes Enhanced version, I'll have some pictures of what view you missed there. How's that?
That'll be fantastic. That'll be awesome.
Now, for you, I got the impression that Bruges, though, as much as I enjoyed it, wasn't the highlight of the trip for you.
You know, we were actually kind of surprised by that upon our return, and we were kind of comparing notes, and then we suddenly realized that it was Delft, actually, that most stood out in our minds. Precisely because of what I said earlier, that Bruges, I mean, for all the beauty that it has, and it really is a beautiful place, it is a very touristy town. I mean, you see the buses arrive in the morning,
sure,
dump their hundreds and hundreds of tourists around, and in the evening, they're out of there, you know, like it happens in many places around Europe. But we enjoyed our time there, and then we went up to Delft, and Delft is like 15 minutes away from The Hague, 15 minutes away from Rotterdam, so it's sort of near to civilization, but it's like civilization just looked at it and said, yeah, you stay over there. It was a fantastic little place. There was almost no one there. I mean, there were all the locals, and there certainly were tourists, but I think if you put us, all the tourists, there in one room, we would have had a very nice mixture with like 30 people. That's it. So we had a chance to just walk around town. Everybody was super nice because they didn't have that rush of people just banging on them. We were able to sit down in cafes and just have some of the wonderful beers that were just the highlight all of the area, that is the Netherlands and Belgium. We haven't talked about the Belgian beers.
Well, what is a good Belgian beer? I'm not a beer drinker, so I couldn't tell you.
You know, I normally am not a beer drinker. I have a beer every so often, but everyone that I liked, that I tried over there, I liked. There was a really strong one called Delirium Tremens that certainly deserves name. There was one called Quack, which is served in this cute little beaker-looking glass. And I have a picture that I can send you so you can put it on the feed.
Okay.
Just drink it, and you have to be careful because you have to grab it by this wooden contraption and be careful that it doesn't splash all over your face. There were a couple of triple beers, which are like one beer, triple the strength, that very nice, but you need to nurse them, which is sadly what the Belgians do. I mean, there's a couple of Belgians that just go and, you know, have one of these beers and they're set for the night. But most of them just grab one a beer and just sit down and talk, and they talk and they talk and they nurse it, and they'll have another one and just stretch it throughout the night. It's just a conversation lubricant. That's it. The thing about Delft is that it was just all the charm of Bruges, but none of the people.
Now, I had not really heard of Delft until I listened to your show recently about it, and I'm sure a lot of people then, like me, weren't aware of the historical significance of Delft. So if you could tell us a little bit about that, that would be good.
Sure. Most people will actually know of Delft by reputation if they know who Johannes Vermeer is. And of course, he was a painter of the very famous Girl with a Pearl Earring. Mm-hmm. Johannes Vermeer was one of the Dutch masters. He certainly wasn't acknowledged as a master during his lifetime, but few were. He lived in Delft. One of his friends was, and I'm going to butcher the name, so sorry to all the Dutch speakers, Anton Leeuwenhoek, and he was the inventor of the microscope and of the camera oscura. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he was the inventor, but he certainly improved on the camera oscura. There was Hugo de Groot, who was a famous politician, and he set up a lot of ideals that eventually led to greater political reforms in the Netherlands and in the rest of Europe. So it certainly had a few important figures. It also was the seat for a while of the Royal House of Orange and of one of the important centers of the Dutch East India Trading Company. It was a very happening little place.
What stands out for Delft for you in terms of what to spend your time on there? Dutch beers, which...
Well, Dutch beers is like Heineken, and, you know, there's a couple
right.
of other ones.
Those I know.
The funny thing about Delft is that you can do it all in one afternoon and you're fine. And you have actually haven't missed anything. There's the main plaza with the new kirk, the new church, which is still like 1400s, which is where the House of Orange now holds its burials. because I don't recall it ran out the year, but at the time there was a war with Spain, and the burial grounds of the House of Orange, Nassau, were in Spanish hands, so they couldn't bury their mm-hmm. dead over there. So
this
they
would have been, I believe, the War of Spanish Secession.
Yeah, thank you. What else? There's the old Kirk, the old church, which mm-hmm. is a few streets away, and it's very interesting because the tower of the church is actually leaning. If you look at it from one of the canals, you sort of look and it's like, that tower is going to fall. And it's not, but they have to be very careful. It has a gigantic bell inside. It's a 9-ton bell that it can only ring on very special occasions because the vibrations of it could actually topple the tower down. So normally you just hear up on the hour, you just hear kind of a little hammer, ding, and that's it, because anything stronger than that on a regular basis, and you know, there goes the church, literally. There's the Delftware, the Royal Delftware factory. We actually didn't get to go to it, but it is just a couple of minutes south of town. And you can actually get there either walking or just taking one of the little, there's a canal boat that takes you down to the factory. But when you're in the center, in the main plaza, you certainly can find a lot of stores selling Delftware pottery. And if you're going to be there, as I said on my show, and something that I didn't do, one of the best souvenirs that you can buy, because it's something that you can only find over there, is a tulip bulb holder. And they're very funny because they're flower pots that mm-hmm. look like hearts, because they have 4 or 5 little holes for to put the tulips, and they kind of look like ventricles, which is kind of weird. We were wondering why the people have Delftware pottery of a heart until we saw one with actual tulips inside. And then I felt like an idiot, but I think that's pretty much it. I mean, again, you can certainly just walk around town and just get a feel for the town. There's a lot of houses where it says Vermeer lived here, or Vermeer had his inn over here, and things like that. There's plaques all around town that tell you little factual details. But again, it's one of these places where you can go see the churches, see the Delftware pottery, and then just walk around, take it all in. Because walking around town is what really makes a visit to these little towns.
So, one question for you. You said that before you went, you did all your homework.
Mm-hmm.
And as you went to the various places, all those various cities, what did you think the guidebooks recommended that you didn't think was really worth the time? Things that they overhyped.
You know, to be honest, even though we actually got to spend a few days on each of our locations,
mm-hmm.
we were sort of on a schedule because we had 4 different locations in 10 days, which is still a pretty speedy trip.
Mm-hmm.
So we focus on the bigger attractions, so to speak. The places that we did visit, the guidebooks were spot on.
Okay.
Any place that the guidebook kind of vacillated on, we just decided to skip it, or we just kind of walked by it, and that was it. There were a couple of surprises. One of the things that we actually were surprised that the book said was going to be cool, and then we actually found to be really, really cool, was we took a day trip out of Amsterdam, and we took a train up to this town, the little town of Hoorn. It's about 50 minutes north of Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
And there we boarded a steam train. And that took us for about like half an hour, 45 minutes up through the Dutch countryside and up into the town of Maidenblik in the north. And what's really amazing, we were there in late June, so we were certainly after the flowers have been picked from the fields, but there were a few patches here and there that told us that if we had been there in, you know, late March, April, or even early May, while the flowers are in full bloom, this would have been an overwhelming experience, because you get to see this explosion of colors. Flowers really love the Dutch soil. It's just amazing. And just going through the countryside and just seeing people just, you know, in their bikes waving you goodbye, and then in a steam train, it was even cooler. We got to the town of Maidenblik, and we got to one of the dikes, so we got to see one of the actual modern dikes of the Netherlands. We got to see some of the modern windmills off in the distance, and we actually got to walk very near to an actual old windmill that is still in the town. And then from there, we took a boat that took us in the IJsselmeer, which is one of the inner seas of the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like another hour or so south, and that dropped us in the town of Enkhuizen, where they have a living history museum. And this is the place that basically recreates the Netherlands as it was in the late 1800s, early 19. They have houses and buildings that have been moved from other locations in the Netherlands to this museum park so they could be preserved. And they haven't set up as they would have been in the little villages. You can actually walk inside most of them and see the paraphernalia of daily life for the Dutch people of the late 19th century. Including, there was actually a very interesting surprise for us. There was a house that belonged to combination Jewish ritual slaughter and kind of like hometown rabbi for a town, you know, outside of the main city. Mm-hmm. That actually spoke a lot about the prevalence of the Jewish population of the Netherlands throughout the whole country before World War II and before mm-hmm. it was pretty much exterminated in the country itself. So that was quite interesting for us. We also saw one of the windmills that they have there, which is small, but it's very cute, which is always counts with windmills. And sure. we got to eat smoked herring, which is kind of weird, but they love it. And really, it's a very interesting place because you actually get to see buildings in their natural setting. I mean, they've been moved around, but they've been reassembled as they would have been in their, you know, little towns all over the Netherlands. And it was a very nice surprise. That was actually one of these places that the book said, yeah, it's nice, but you might just want to skip it and get back to Amsterdam. And we said, well, we paid for it, so we might as well enjoy it. And we were certainly very glad that we got in there and we walked around and got to see this bit of history on site. And then we got back to Amsterdam. So that was actually a very, very neat surprise for us.
Interesting. Do you have any more information for people who would be looking for the same kind of self-guided tour? Where did you find that through?
We got our package tour. It was, you mind if I actually say the name of the company?
No, not at all.
It was Gate One. We found it through some papers that we got in the mail or something like that. And it was in a magazine or something like that. And that's how we got to do it. This is actually the first time that we've taken any kind of tour, pre-packaged or anything. We mm-hmm. actually always put together our trips ourselves. We have all the books. We have the videos and the DVDs. And we certainly know how to use Google and the internet. So we just put together our itineraries ourselves. This actually, like I said, was the first time that we took any kind of deal like that. And we took it because it was actually a very good package for the
price.
Yeah,
I've seen their deals, and they do have some pretty good deals. I'll include that link in the show notes, obviously.
Other than that, we actually, like I said, just put it together ourselves. Use Google and ricksteves.com as a starting point. And then from there, we just start searching around everything that we can, grabbing all the information that we can. We're, like I said, we're nerds, so we, you know, just have all these books and research out. So,
as we wrap this up, any other recommendations for someone who's going to follow in your footsteps to the Benelux region, to Netherlands and Belgium?
If I really have to give a tip for that is, if you're going to be in the area, try to make it to Belgium. I think Belgium doesn't get the recognition it deserves in the greater European landscape. It is a very interesting country. It has, and we actually only stayed in the north, in the Dutch side. We actually never went to the south mm-hmm. with Wallonia, which would have been the French side. So that's a completely different area over there. Certainly, I mean, go to Brussels, go to Bruges, even to Antwerp or Ghent. These are all very nice cities to visit. You can actually do them as a day trip, if anything, and so you can sweat your feet without having to commit. And if you are going to the Netherlands, get out of Amsterdam. I mean, Amsterdam, it is a fantastic city to visit, but the countryside is beautiful. It's very accessible. The trains take you anywhere that you want to go. There's buses and trams and things like that. Go out and see what the Dutch countryside is, because most of the Netherlands, it's really not Amsterdam. And by that, I mean that, you know, Amsterdam is its own little microcosm with people who are like Amsterdammers. And they're Dutch, but they're more like city folk. Most of the Netherlands has as a more of a rustic town feel to it. And to not get that experience as well, even by going to places like Delft, which is sort of like a town, but it's nestled in the middle of the countryside. So it has that sensibility. If you don't get that other side of the experience, you'll be missing on something. So,
well, thanks very much. It's nice to hear a trip that includes Belgium that isn't one of those classic, if this is Tuesday, this must be Belgium.
You know, I've never seen that movie. I cannot find it. It's
I'm
incredible.
I'm sure it's on Netflix someplace, but
no, it's actually not on DVD.
Oh,
it's really,
really well,
funny.
And then the other thing that I was glad to hear you talk about was that you actually got out on bikes, because, again, these are the lowlands. And so for those of us who don't like hills, this is a great place to bike.
Absolutely. We only did it in Bruges because of time constraints. Mm-hmm. But if it really up to us, we'd do it everywhere. Over there, if you're not biking, you are going too slow.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show, Daniel.
No, thank you for having me.
Again, I don't have any internet access at the time that I'm recording this, and therefore no internet resources for this particular show, but I did have some letters from the community that I wanted to share. I got one from Amanda from Plymouth, Indiana, who says, "Here's a weird one for you. In episode 74, Word Nerds Hit Denmark, or something like that, the Word Nerd guy you interviewed used a neat word you would explain later. The word meant a tell in a conversation that somehow shows your origin, like an East Coaster saying soda. I think that was the definition, and I've needed a word that means that twice recently. Sadly, I'm on dial-up, and downloading that whole podcast would take close to 4 hours. Do you remember the word? My husband is forcing me to watch Die Hard movies again, and in Die Hard 3, he gets in an elevator with the bad guys who slip and call it a lift. That's exactly what your nerd, I think, meant. And the word that Amanda was searching for is shibboleth. And I'll put a link in the show notes to the word shibboleth. It is a word that actually comes from the Old Testament, from a story where they were using the pronunciation of a particular word to tell what tribe someone was from. I think it was the tribe of Dan, if I remember correctly, but I don't have access to that right now. Again, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. So in our family, for instance, if you say pronounce the round orange fruit and you get the answer of orange, you know that somebody might be from New York. I also got an email from Ed, and Ed said, "Hi, one of the nice things about our era is that podcast technology is widespread enough to be usable, yet new enough so that podcast creators are more accessible than the stars of other media. That's great because I bet you actually read this note of thanks and appreciation, Ed. I do, in fact, read all the emails I get, and I think I always respond also. I love listening to The Amateur Traveler because even when I'm doing yard work at home, I can vicariously enjoy a crazy, grueling, yet rewarding trip to southern Spain or learn about the best places to go to get the authentic Greek experience. Most of the podcasts I listen to are in a foreign language so that I can hear a good show and also sharpen my French or learn some Spanish, but a few English podcasts are too good to pass up. I enjoy The Amateur Traveler largely because you do, and your enthusiasm is contagious. Thanks very much for the excellent podcast. May you have a wonderful travels in the future, and may you tell us all about it." And traveling is, as I said at the beginning of the show, what I am doing right now, and I certainly plan to tell you all about it. But right now, I think I ought to get off of this balcony because the rain is starting to get to me, and I think it's time to go inside. As always, I appreciate your listening. I love to hear from you. You can reach me at host@amateurtraveler.com or find many other ways to contact me at amateurtraveler.com/contact. As always, thanks so much for listening.
I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not, maybe not today.
The best and the brightest served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show, and Limelight.